answering questions. Any questions? I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
As soon as Gokushima asked the questions, it became very intense. Mm.
Questions can be the most enlivening and persuasive part of any class or presentation. I know that when I first was coming to the temple at 22nd Avenue, what really got me were the questions and answers. Those were the days when everybody had his own philosophy, every bum on the street. And the devotees used to just handle them. Boom, boom, boom. They had an answer for everything. And that's the nature of our philosophy. We have an answer for everything. Whereas everyone else speculates and really doesn't know what to say, we've got a point of view on just about everything. And we can back it up, not just with, well, it seems to me, and I think, or I, but with really strong arguments. Questions. Leave time for questions and answers. The whole Srimad Bhagavatam is nothing but questions and answers. Yakrita Krishna Samprashna. Perfect questions. Any more questions? This point about always having a question and answer booth was something I took from Prabhupada. Someone was writing from the West that we're having a festival and so on. And Prabhupada wrote back, it's very good that you're having a festival and so on. And here in Delhi or Bombay or Calcutta, we're having our festival. And especially the question and answer booth is very successful, so you should also have this. And Prabhupada would have that in the Indian pandals, manned by sannyasis and senior devotees, and it would always be mobbed, question and answer booth. So it's worth setting up.
And buttons.
And?
Buttons. I was in one of those two, first Bombay.
And bhaktas. You can get a lot of action if you have a good question and answer booth with quite an arrangement so that people can sit and people can hear the answers and so on. And the questions. Yes?
Number 10, say related answers to your main speech. That implies that the questions have to be connected to the main speech.
No, not necessarily. They could ask about anything under the sun, and you can say, well, as I mentioned in my talk, and you pick anything you mentioned, and it pulls things together a little bit more. But it's a fact that we may discourage questions unrelated to the topic. You have your option. If you're question hungry and you have enough time, maybe you'll take a question on anything. Or if it's a good question, you'll admit it under any circumstance. Otherwise, unrelated, tangential, or off the wall, as they say, questions, you may want to dismiss on the grounds of irrelevancy. Yes, big amount.
Yeah. Number 6, repeat the question.
Yes.
Two more things there. One, to think, gives you time to think. And another thing, it really reassures the audience that you know, you answer this question, you're not afraid of this question at all.
Hold on, I'm going to write this down for my notes. First one was...
Gives you time to think.
Good point. But if that's why you're doing it, then don't say it in such a way as, roll your eyes around. Unless you really want to. If you really want to indicate that it's a question you hadn't thought about before and that you're really giving it thought for the first time. And you might even end up with, I'm going to have to get back to you later on that question. Okay. Another point? Or question? Yes?
Yeah, about repeating the questions. Like,
yes.
I found, like, a lot of time I recorded class And you never know, like when you really listen to the class, like you hear the voices back there, but you don't understand.
That's how it is for the audience too. They hear your answer and they never hear the question.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating and it pulls the punch out of your answer. Part of a good answer should be how appropriate, how neatly it answers the question. If you can't hear the question, you can't appreciate that. Thank you. If you can't hear the question, you can't appreciate that. So repeat the question. Repeating the question is a good policy. You may have understood it wrong. No, that's not what I meant. That's not what I'm asking. Yes?
Could you clarify the sub-point under 11A, if you need to explain it?
Yes, answer the question. This is very important. When you answer a question, start by giving your answer, and follow by giving the reasons for your answer. Don't work the other way around. Because the more you work the other way around, the more your audience loses confidence that you ever intend to answer. And the greater the possibility that you will, in fact, forget to answer. You'll get so wrapped up in your reasons that you'll never come to the point. So answer first. No. Yes. Under certain circumstances. In the 8th chapter, or whatever the answer may be. Answer the question first, and then go on to explain it. And if that makes your answer outrageous, so much the better. If your unadorned answer without the reasoning is practically an affront to the sensibilities of the audience, great. Because they're going to listen real hard to the rest of what you say. So first answer the question, then give your reasons. So under 11A. So if there are facts being asked for, first present the facts. Then explain them. How many people join your movement, actually? Don't start saying, well, actually, it's hard to keep figures, and a lot of people join, and a lot of people leave, and this, and this, and this, and this, and decentralized organizations. Say, about 1,000 people a year, probably. Then go on to give your answer. Of course, that figure is very unreliable, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Or else, I don't know. Or whatever the answer may be, start with the answer, then give the details. Clear? Often broken principle, yes.
On the point 15, there is no questions. I remember that when I was still a Bhagavad Gita class, then there is no Bhagavad Gita, all the questions from the devotees.
Yeah, the devotees are usually dependable for asking questions. Otherwise, what I'm indicating here is that you can bring up some question that you were already asked some other time. In other words, you have an hour to speak. You spoke for half an hour, and you left a half hour for questions. No one raises his hand. But there you are with half an hour on your hand. So you don't have to look foolish. Well, I guess I'll leave. Instead, you can say, no questions? Okay. You know, the other night, someone asked me a really interesting question. And then you start talking about that, and you can give a whole other lecture if you want from it. Okay, that's what I'm indicating. You like that part?
Yeah? Yeah, I do. Very good. Answering questions, one thing I find all the time, if you're always saying to yourself also, you've got across the spectrum of advancement in our society, a question asked in a class, which, you know, the answer may not be immediately
accessible,
or, you know, sometimes the question never supposed to us all appreciation rather than a strict quote from the Bhagavatam or something. I do this myself, they kind of reason themselves to a conclusive point as the answer, rather than just giving it straight. answer as the first discerning statement?
I don't think I follow.
I'm trying to immediately think of an example. I think perhaps in the classes that Bhagavad Gita class we were having sometimes, some questions were asked which, you know, they required some
depth
of answering, yes, and there was kind of some backwards and forwards before I think everyone came to a, you know, before the final understanding was derived.
Right. So you're saying, what you're saying is that one should be careful not to cut off discussion of a point that really requires more than just an answer or a quote, but requires exploration.
I would say my experience happens frequently.
Too much.
Classes,
okay. There are different ways of answering questions. One way is just to give a quote or an answer and satisfy yourself that I've answered the question and that's it. Another way to approach it is to recognize that the question, in fact, is a question that requires to be explored, to be looked at from different angles of realization, to have different scriptural quotations or Prabhupada anecdotes or statements brought to bear upon it, or in some other way to be investigated with some scrutiny. So if you take such a question and cut it off merely by refusing to deal with it in some way, either by just giving your own short answer and leaving it at that, thereby frustrating the rest of the people who might have something to say about it, or thereby precluding their contribution to illuminating the subject matter, or if you have any other way, just cut short a question that perhaps requires to be dealt with at greater length, you risk, number one, frustrating your audience, and number two, cutting yourself off from the understanding that you might have gained by having the courage to let out some line, as it's said in the fishing trade. That's your point.
For example, in the writing process, when learning that often a writer, by writing the piece, suddenly realizes
where he's going.
Well, in the beginning, he may have had a rough indicator of idea, but becomes very much in focus by actually writing. I would say, in answering questions, perhaps that's the
same thing may hold.
Yeah.
Sometimes, okay. Okay. Sometimes the question may not be precisely formulated, but it's something which is or perhaps ought to be on people's minds. And if you let the discussion go loose, as it were, then you'll find something illuminating or satisfying, whereas otherwise you might still be in the darkness and dissatisfied. Yeah? Good point. Good point. Sometimes, on the other hand, you may not want to do that simply for your own formal considerations, how much time you have, what way you want to direct the discussion. But that could also be a lame excuse. Janak Prabhu.
I noticed at school engagements, there's always a tendency for people to ask the old basic questions based on invisible appearance. What's this? What do you wear that for? It's like a stock questions. The one way to deal with that, Shivananda Swami showed me.
Uh-huh.
He said, look, before we start, let me just explain a few things. For all the curiosity questions, I'm going to answer them all first. And he just went through the, this is because of this, this is because of this, this is because of this. Okay, so now I'm done speaking. I'd like to hear some philosophical questions. That's the way he did. Very clever, very cool. Sometimes you can waste
a lot of time on those. Good technique. Good technique. good. You can really get irked by those kinds of questions. Yes?
Sometimes, speakers have, I was cutting off the question before the section.
Yes, where is that? It's mentioned here.
Five.
Don't cut people off. Big offense. Big offense. You know what they're going to ask. You've heard it 70,000 times. But it's their question, and they're not going to feel satisfied unless they get a chance to ask it. And the audience may also feel that fair play has been violated unless the guy gets a chance to get his question out. So be patient. Let the person answer. Be a gentleman. Be polite. Let him have his say. Let him have his... have it all out. Then, answer it. Don't just cut people off arbitrarily before he's had even a chance to say anything. Your answer becomes stronger. Even if he's arguing, let him argue. The classic example is Prabhupada with Kirtanananda Maharaj, where Kirtanananda Maharaj asked some question to the effect that, I don't understand why you're always saying this and this and this about Ramakrishna. And Prabhupada just let him go on and say his piece. Prabhupada said, are you finished? And Kirtanananda Maharaj said, no. And then he went on speaking. And Prabhupada said, so now are you finished? Kirtanananda Maharaj said, well. And he said a few things more. Then when he was finally finished, Prabhupada said, so you're finished? He said, yes. Then Prabhupada took him on completely and annihilated all of his points. It's more power. How much more powerful it is to do it that way than to cut the man off after two sentences and just go on your own. Da 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 da. That's the power of questions and answers. People want to see, how is he going to answer this one? Your answer gets strength. The stronger the question, the more persuasive your answer. If you just knock over a little guy, that doesn't convince us you're strong. But if you knock over Cassius Clay or something, then we're impressed. Muhammad Ali, huh? Then we're impressed. So let the guy become his... let him build up his muscles and inflate his chest as much as he wants. The bigger he gets, the better it is when you knock him down. Yes, Partha Prabhu.
There are examples also very striking examples of Prabhupada chopping people off.
Yeah.
Before they even ask the question.
Yeah, that's true. But that's for Prabhupada and PhD students. You know, when you're advanced at this kind of stuff and you really know what you're doing, then maybe consider cutting people off. But as a general rule of thumb, let people have their say. Yet or not, Prabhu?
I asked you that question last year, but you told me that we would come to the audience for a certain time now. What about starting a class or when you speak to a certain audience, you give the lecture and you start the lecture by asking questions in order to make the whole thing alive?
That's a good technique. I think in how to start a talk, we talked about that. A very effective way to open a talk is with a question or a series of questions. Sure, that's great. That gets people involved. Some people are very good at that. Others are not as good. But it's an excellent technique, definitely.
Asking the audience questions to start?
Sure, sure. If you have you can ask a specific question. Who here has ever wondered about such and such and such and such? Or, I read a very interesting thing that there was a case in which a child remembered a previous birth. Now, who here can give an explanation for that? And you let two or three people give their little explanations. And you maybe point out fallacies in them. Say, here's our explanation. Or, I don't know anything about this case, but let me give you a possible explanation from Vedic literature. You've already set up a little game with them. Sure. Or a demonstration. Prabhupada did that with a school audience, a little child. Show us what's your hand, what's your head, where's your leg. Very good. Demonstration. So these are all different possible ways. Sure. Other questions?
I have a question about the previous question. About
okay.
Questions. If someone's going on and on with their questions, sometimes they start talking about different subject matters in the same question. And unless you cut them off, ask them to limit it and then answer one at a time.
Well, that's mentioned here. If a question has many parts, divide it up. If a person asks you three questions, say, all right, now let me see if I've got you straight. You've got three questions here, and let me ask them one at a time. Or you see he's going on and on. Well, wait a second, you've asked several questions here already. Let me answer the first one or two, and then we can come back to you for more. Or, my memory is short, and I don't think I'm going to remember all your questions, and it sounds like you've got some good questions there, so why don't you let me deal with them one at a time? Okay?
Sometimes they're bringing up points just for the sake of bringing them up. They answer one, and they're not even listening, they start answering another.
Right. So
asking another.
So hold them in check. Insist that, or gently insist, on answering questions one at a time. And finishing up one point. I thought you had a really good question there, and I want to make sure I've answered it completely before we go on to the next one. You know, that gives you a chance to really not just answer a string of useless questions, but get your side out, get the philosophy out, which is what you want to do. You're not necessarily interested in answering all of their foolish questions. Their questions are a vehicle by which you answer doubts and bring out points of understanding. So just that a person has a lot of questions doesn't necessarily mean that he's entitled to answers to all of them. He's not necessarily going to be the person who's going to control the direction of the discussion. That's your business. Provided his questions are relevant and reasonable, you'll follow right along with him. But if he's just going on and on and on, then you want to take control again. Sure. Other questions? Yes.
Could you tell us something about how much devotees should give strong answers? Like, you know, sometimes people ask about sex life or things like that, and devotees respond like Srila Prabhupada, and it makes people not so well. So,
it did that with Prabhupada too, sometimes. I'm not going to discourage strong answers on the grounds that people don't like them. I can recall one question. This was 26 Second Avenue again. There had been a yoga, very nice yoga society girl who had been coming from uptown and attending our Bhagavad Gita classes three nights a week. And Prabhupada came to New York. And so she started attending his lectures. And one night she said, Swamiji, with that sort of goony, merged look that these Yoga Society people tend to get, Swamiji, isn't it true that ultimately when we attain perfect realization, everything is one? So Prabhupada answered, no. He said, there is individuality. Just like if you want, he said, there are so many holes in your body. He said, does it mean you can put food in any hole? Can you put it here? Or here? Or here? No! And he just so thoroughly annihilated the girl's point of view that we never saw her again. I think she left in tears. But she left with some understanding or some words that I'm sure would stay with her for a long, long time. Yes?
If Srila Prabhupada did this, you know, there is some difference between him and us.
I agree. We shouldn't be obnoxious just for the sake of being obnoxious or for in the sake of imitation. But Srila Prabhupada said on one occasion, strong words are sometimes needed to wake a sleeping man. So, don't shy away needlessly from strong words. If you see that someone needs to hear strong words, that his problem really is that he's so much addicted to sex life that he can't understand the first thing about bhakti yoga, and really what he needs to hear is that sex life is the life of cats and dogs, then don't shy away just on the grounds that it may not be genteel to suggest such a thing. Let him have it. Let him have it. Strong speaking. But don't just needlessly throw around the heaviest thing you can think of. Yes, Marsh.
I think it probably has to be balanced, because on the other hand, Prabhupada also mentioned, I can answer like this because I'm an old man.
Yeah. On one occasion he was speaking very strongly to someone. He said, I can speak strongly like that because I'm an old man. He has to accept it. Adi Raj Prabhu?
Yeah, what about the reaction of the devotees in the audience? I've seen sometimes the person asks a question, the way it's either asked or the answer to it, the devotees will laugh.
Yeah, that's another point. Devotees don't know how to respond sometimes. Someone asks a question, and when it's answered, if it's answered reasonably, then all the devotees break into applause or break into cheers, and they just become such an so carried away with being the rooting section that the person really feels that his question is not being given the sober attention it deserves. Mm-hmm. So your most important function as the audience is to listen and to learn something from what's going on, and not necessarily to cheer.
So seeing devotees, they just laugh, the slightest little thing, you know, and the person...
Prabhupada got angry at that one time. I forget what the occasion was. Even at initiations, Prabhupada would give someone a name, and the devotees would laugh. And Prabhupada got... I remember one time he said, don't laugh. This is serious business. Devotees should not be giddy. Devotee is sober. If there's something genuinely to be appreciated, then sometimes that response is appropriate, to applaud. Sometimes an answer is just so brilliant that the audience breaks into applause and devotees may join right in. But when it's artificial, it really detracts. It really just, what can you say? It's so stagey, so artificial, so off-putting, that it's a practice we should avoid. Yes?
That tape I was going to play was an example that Anuraj was mentioning. It was really good the way Prabhupada smashed this lady, but the devotees just intimidated her by laughing.
Want to listen? Let's listen. You have it queued up?
Yes.
He's got a tape of Prabhupada. I haven't heard it yet. I'm sure we can't go wrong.
From where?
From Atlanta. I just asked you one question.
Yeah. You're holding the tape recorder. You're in control.
Well, I just wanted to know, sometimes if our goal may be different, like we're trying to sell the person a book or something, is it okay to compromise just to get them to take the book and take it and give it a donation?
What do you mean by compromise?
Well, like modify our answer a little bit. So you don't want to be too heavy.
You mean lie to them?
Not lie, but like kind of beat around the bush without lying at all.
Well, that's a different thing. You have to consider very carefully. Your purpose is there is selling books, not necessarily answering all philosophical questions on the spot. But Brahmins avoid duplicity. So be careful about that. Go ahead.
In the Christian Bible, it says that God created all of earth. He created the stars, animals, but he created a human being in his image, which was the same.
That's nice. That's right.
Explain to me then why you say
that the God is person. God created human beings after his own image. That means he has also two hands, two legs, like us.
No.
Why not? You say you say God has created human. You say has created human being after his image. Therefore, his image must be like you. Why do you say no? Why controversy? First of all, let us settle this.
Controversy not to your religion, but to the other religions that say that we are... Other religion,
why you are concerned with other religion? Talk of what God says in your Bible.
What says in my Bible?
You are saying that God created human being after his image. Is it not?
Yes.
Then God, his image is like human being.
Not according to way, way back, because...
That is another thing. God has got his two hands and two legs, one head, like human being. But that hands and legs and head may not be exactly like us. But he has got the image.
I have never seen him. I do not know.
Then why are you speaking? Do not know. Don't
talk.
If you do not know, then you learn who knows. Don't talk. That is the defect of the modern children, that one does not know and he wants to teach. That's all right. To understand the God, we are worshipping the God's image. He has got the two hands, two legs like us. But his hands and legs are not like our hands and legs. This guy, Krishna says, Patram Pusram Palantoyam Yumi Vatnapajitshati Dalham Asnad. God's hand is so expansive, universal, that although he is in his kingdom, in his abode, when you offer something to God, he takes. He can expand his hand in that way. Not only one devotee, but at this simultaneously many millions of devotees are offering him hand. He said, that is his hand. At my hand, only 3 feet, that's all. So there is God's hand, but that hand is not like my hand. This is understood. He can expand his hand millions and trillions of miles. That is his hand. That is explained in the Vedic literature. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha. God is Vigraha, his form, exactly like our form. But his form is Sat-Chit Ananda.
Certainly was.
She must have been pretty red. Red on the spot.
Notice how Srila Prabhupada nailed her from the very beginning. It says in the Bible that man is made in the image of God. That means God has a form. He has an image. Well, in other religions, why talk about other religions? Did she try 3 or 4 times to topic switch? And every time, that is another thing. Why are you bringing up this? You were talking about the Bible. Your point was, he even reminded her, you were talking about this. And then he just kept driving in his point. Man is made in God's image. Man, God has a form. Finally, to the point where she had to admit that she didn't know anything about the subject. Then Prabhupada really took command and explained the subject so nicely. Not just to humiliate her, although he did that to a fair share too, but to clarify the subject matter. Learn to do it like that. Yes?
I was thinking if we can maybe get a copy of all these different types of arguments, and then we can argue when we get back, practice with those devotees.
We've got copies of the different kinds of arguments on these handout sheets.
Oh, we do?
Sure. So you sure you can practice with your friends when you get back home? Astound your friends? Yes?
Well,
it might be nice to see all of you Vishnu's fallacies listed. And just like a kind of simple.
I gave you a whole book.
Oh, I understand that, but I'm just saying that, you know, to sort of see it in all in one place.
They are all in one place. They're at the end of the book.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, at the end, there's a neat little appendix, if some of you have seen it. Straight and Crooked Thinking. There's a list of all the different arguments he deals with in the text, and a quick answer on how to deal with each one. And there's a page reference also, so you can go back to the chapter, see what the argument was in some detail, what the fallacy was, and his explanation of how to deal with it. Yes?
Actually, all those arguments and dirty and good tricks and how to argue with other people, are they under all the same titles, like the Hey Man?
No. Right? The straw man argument has different names. Either or has different names. False dilemma can be called either or. There, all these different arguments come under different names.
Depending on who wrote the book.
Depending on who wrote the book. There's many of these arguments are famous under different names. Yes. Topic switching is also known as diversion, digression.
So can one point out in this term one learned? For example, I remember you did it once, the whole this topic switching, told the audience. So
they'll understand it. You're changing the subject. You're switching the topic. That's an ad hominem argument. If they don't understand ad hominem, you're attacking the person, not the argument. People will understand it. Make yourself clear. Other points about questions? I'm giving lots of time for questions today. That's one thing I found. I did a university program at IIT about a month or so ago. And I let a person ask his question. I answered his question as fully as I could. And afterwards I said, "Is that all right?" And if the person says yes, and it is all right. And if he says no, he gets another chance to ask further or to satisfy himself. That has the result, number one, that he really does get a chance to be satisfied. And number two, that your audience really will feel that you've given this person more than a fair chance. Someone else had been speaking to a similar group not much earlier, and they'd complained that our questions weren't dealt with, that we were cut off. So sometimes if you use that technique, let them speak to their full satisfaction. Ask them afterwards. Is that all right? Does that answer your question? And when they're satisfied, stop. And until they're satisfied, let them keep asking. As long as it's reasonable. Other points? Yes?
Here on 11, is answer the question.
Yes.
First thing, answer the question.
Yes.
Because sometimes is you want to say something before to answer the question, and then you want to answer the question, but not so quickly. Because
you want to answer the question, but not so quickly.
Not so quickly, because maybe he's going to don't understand. Or
that's my point. You're better off, as far as possible, answering the question first and explaining your answer second. If your answer is that complicated, the person may very well become impatient, or your audience may very well become impatient, waiting for you to finally get to the point. So better to get to the point first and explain the point second.
But sometimes I experienced that in Sankirtan, when you saw something, some paraphernalia, they ask you very quickly, how much cost? And you don't want to say it.
That's business. I'm not talking about business questions.
This is practical thing.
Yeah, I'm not. This answering questions doesn't mean in business. Doesn't mean when someone asks you how much does it cost. I'm not telling you how to answer that kind of question. This is a class in answering philosophical questions.
Also philosophical. Sometimes it's like this.
If you deliberately don't want to answer someone's question, if you deliberately wish to avoid it, switch the subject, or put another question ahead of it and answer that one first, go ahead and do it. If you have a real reason for wanting to do it, go ahead and do it. But recognize that you're breaking this rule of thumb and that you're doing it at your own risk. Generally, we unconsciously do it. We just let our whole explanation come out and we keep the guy waiting 10 minutes and then we give him our answer at the very end of our clear, systematic logic, by which time the guy's already tuned off. So that's what this is for. If you deliberately, consciously, and expertly want to put the answer off till later, for excellent reasons, go ahead and do it. Otherwise, don't. Yes?
There's an observation I noticed. Sometimes people may ask very challenging questions, and I've seen one of our devotees, he answered by not answering the question. He said, well, there is different ways to answer the question, and he gave a whole talk of how to ask questions, submissive, and so on and so forth. And this way you spoke at the whole...
So you have, that's what I'm saying, you have your options. You may choose, under some circumstance, to deliberately avoid answering the question. You may, in such a circumstance, be perceived as a quitter. That may be looked upon as a cop-out, that you really don't want to answer the question. You really don't know the answer to the question. You're really a coward and you're not up to the man's challenge. So you're saying, well, that's okay, I don't want to play today. You know, if a little kid comes along, you'll fight with him, but when a big kid comes, he says, that's all right, I don't want to fight today. So it may be perceived as cowardice rather than wisdom. Generally speaking, therefore, answer people's questions. When you've got an excellent reason not to, consider declining or changing to what you want to do. Yes?
Earlier on in the course, you talked about if someone doesn't understand it, so that's what I'm asking you. Talked about someone asking some dirty question.
Dirty question.
Ask her, and then you answer very quickly. Ask another person, and then ask him to answer, or something like that.
Giving a short answer.
Huh?
Maybe that was in reference to giving a very short answer.
I don't know. I'm just not clear. I don't recognize what you're talking about.
Someone asked a loaded question, a quick answer, or ask someone else to answer this question.
Uh-huh. I don't remember having said that, but yes, you can do that. If a question is long and complex and foolish, you might give them a one-word answer. Under some circumstances, it appears that the ABC logic dictates that such and such and such and such. And under other circumstances, it appears that this and this. This might lead us to conclude, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I want to know if you have any opinion on that. No, I don't have an opinion. Next question. I'll leave the guy sitting with his speculations. Yeah. Any other questions? One point that I'd like to make, which is not on your sheet, concerns a circumstance in which someone is asking questions of another devotee. Someone sitting there preaching, either answering questions or speaking, and you come on the scene. And in the course of the discussion, you realize that you could be answering the person's questions in a different way, perhaps more directly, more effectively, more expertly. You feel that the person who's speaking is not doing the best possible job, or that you could help. Don't butt in. It's a major offense. Both to the person who's speaking and to the person he's speaking to. It's a major breach of etiquette. Avoid it. He's speaking. He's preaching. He's been asked the question. He's been answering. Let him do it. Badly or well, let him do it. And you listen. That's your duty. If you happen to be extremely senior, you may want to take control, usually after letting the person speak his piece. Or at least after saying, Prabhu, would you mind if I said something about this also? if you're really senior, it's really your position not to let this man botch it, but to set things straight and move in there appropriately and civilly and do it. Otherwise, let the neophyte blow it and afterwards tell him, you know, Prabhu, I think you could have answered that question this way. Or next time you might want to try answering him this way. Or, you know, you were giving your own opinion a lot, but generally we try to say something from the Shastra. Let him do it. Don't walk all over the guy. And if the person who's speaking is senior to you, then but under no circumstances should you be butting in. That's called Vaishnavapura. A senior, more experienced preacher is speaking, and you butt in. That's a major offense. And the person who's, and the preacher can't do anything about it. Because if he interrupts to lecture to you, to call you on the carpet, to tell you, listen, buddy, I'm preaching, this is none of your business, go take a hike. Then he puts off his questioner. There's an internal squabble suddenly present, which takes precedence over whatever philosophical point might have been on the floor. So he's stuck. You put him on the spot. He can't keep answering because you took over, and he can't tell you to butt out because then the whole thing looks bad. So don't create that kind of nasty situation. Be patient.
So suppose you're preaching with someone like a Sunday feast and another devotee comes up to you and butts in.
That's what I'm saying. You're stuck. You really can't do very much about it. You may have some adroit measure. You might say, excuse me, Prabhu, but they were just calling you upstairs. I heard they need your help in the Pujari department. Or whatever else might work. But chances are 50-50 that you'll just be stuck. You'll have to put up with this guy, more or less butting in and perhaps messing up something that... Because you had a progress in mind. You asked another question, which perhaps doesn't really bring the thing to a conclusion. You're leading the guy on. You've got a plan, a strategy. And in walks, you know, Corporal such and such, not having seen your maps, not knowing your plans, and just marches in, guns blazing, to smash into smithereens. Let the preacher preach. Especially if he's a general. Corporals and privates shouldn't butt in. Other points? Other questions?
The difficult situation to handle is someone in the audience is asking a question and then somebody else in the audience starts answering that. You might give an answer.
Yeah.
That could be also...
How do you deal with those?
Yeah.
How do you deal with those?
I usually just receive that this question actually was asked. Our opinion, our Vedic version was asked.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think you're so experienced as a place that the speaker speaks.
So or else you can just let him give his foolish answer. And then you deal with both of them. The foolish question and the foolish answer, you hit them both.
Then you might have two people coming at you.
Yeah, you risk that. Let's see if there's something else here I was specifically going to get. Listen carefully to each question, content and intent. Content means what they're saying, and intent means what they're really saying. By tone of voice, by gesture, by your own intelligence and experience with similar questions, you may see that what the person's asking means something perhaps different, or there's an underlying doubt that you really want to address, and not just the superficial question. Just like someone says, Prabhu, are you going to Delhi today? So I can answer yes or no, or I could answer, listen, you know, I just don't have time to, you know, do your ticket business for you. One is content, one is intent.
Is that right? Is that when you're in a coffee conference? Because it comes up often. someone asks a question, you can just see this because he's asking about something.
Sure, it's most polite. You can do it in a most polite way. That, yeah, the answer to your question is such and such. It seems to me there might be an underlying, a greater question here. That perhaps your question, you know, that's implied in your question. And then you deal with the underlying thing. Or else you don't say that, but you deal with it anyway.
So I've seen when the Lord is not even answering the first question, just going straight to the root of it.
Yeah, you can do that. Prabhupada would do it.
It's very effective, but
it can be. But make sure that you're not just creating frustration. In general, answer the question, then do whatever else you have in mind. Explain yourself or go to the root of the thing. But break that rule when you have a good reason to. If you prefer not to answer the question directly but go right to the point, do it. But do it as a matter of conscious, deliberate intention, not as a matter of ineptness. Yes?
What if the intent is not exactly what you think it is? Or you're speculating? In other words, isn't your intention
then you're not expert. But by practice, you'll gradually understand what the intention is.
Sometimes someone may not have...
Or ask him. You know, let him go out a little bit with a couple more questions and try to determine what he's getting at. Or ask him, what are you driving... I think I understand your question, but really, what are you driving at? What do you really mean to say? Ask him. If you think he's got something else, you know, under the surface... Say, I think there's something, you know, under the surface of your question that I'm picking up on, but I don't quite understand it. Could you be more direct about this? If that's how you want to handle it.
Because sometimes if I ask a question and someone may think my intents are one thing, when they're not, it becomes a little frustrating.
So don't speculate needlessly. If someone answers your question, right. Don't just cut the person off. Confident that you really know what he wants to say, and then answer a question other than the one you had in mind. Don't be such an expert guesser that you don't listen. The way you determine the intent is by listening, not by being cocksure of yourself and cutting the person off. It comes from listening, which means you have respect for the person. You really want to listen and hear and understand what he has in mind. Yes.
Does the word preach confuse people?
Yes, it can.
That's a better other term. Or...
How did that question come up, by the way?
TV? I'm not sure why.
Well,
Why
did this question come up now? I'm asking for questions about how to answer questions. And you're asking about what the word preach does.
Yeah,
you may sometimes... Anyway, the answer to your question is yes, the word preach can be a dirty word in Western culture these days. Thus, the adjective preachy doesn't mean full of valuable instructions. It means sticking your trip on somebody. So you may want to say teach or distribute knowledge or whatever rather than preach. In ISKCON, preaching is esteemed. Outside, preaching is not so wonderfully appreciated. Yeah. I want to see if there are any more points that I want to get in. Yeah, there are a couple more. I'm going to squeeze them in. Speak from authority. Don't speculate in your answers. In the Bhagavatam class, particularly, avoid giving subjective opinions about non-philosophical topics. You're not there sitting on the asana to give your learned opinion about how to dress the deities or what the temple schedule should be or whether the brahmacharis should be doing this or that or whether the women should be this or whether the temple president said this and I think it's right. Know what you're there for. We talked about this before. Yes?
What if you have some valuable point to make come across, but the only source of that you can remember where to quote it from is someone who's like not moving or not respected anymore, like some form of guru or something.
Then that's not authority. If I ask you how many planetary systems there are, and you say, well, I think I heard Srila such and such say, or Srila such and such was said, he's not an authority. Doesn't count. Where did he find out where he got it from? Or else you could bring it up, if not as the person who's answering the question, but asking a question, because I heard such and such person say, I wanted to know whether it was true. Then the person has to answer you by giving an authority we respect. Not by saying, well, I heard another Srila such and such who's also no longer with us. Our authority means Shastra. Primarily, even when you cite Guru, or when you cite Sadhu, the real authority is Shastra. If people quote me, answer questions by quoting perfectly good authorities, this Maharaj or that Maharaj or this senior devotee or this person who's, you know, extremely advanced. But I may not be satisfied simply with knowing that such and such person said it. And even if I think it's a brilliant answer, still I'll want to know, did he say where it came from? Did he say where he got his answer? Because that's our ultimate authority, Shastra. Answer from Shastra. Yes?
The verse this morning in Srimad Bhagavatam class mentioned education.
Yes.
So I mean the thought of the Institute. Now, do you think it would have been appropriate for Maharaj to bring that up?
He might have. I'm not saying that you can't bring up anything from experience or from logic or from practical affairs, but our ultimate source for everything is Shastra. And if you can illuminate that in different ways, from your personal experience or whatever, that's fine. Our last point about questions is not to let the question period drag on and on and on past its height. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.